Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Mangoes are everywhere you turn these days, cheap at the supermarket and free from most neighbors. The prolific fruit is the gift that keeps on giving in the summer in Southwest Florida, but it's not the only tropical fruit we get to grow here in the subtropics. Few know that better than Brian Galligan. He's the director of horticulture at Naples Botanical Garden. He joins us in the studio to talk about the trees that bring so much. Brian, thanks for coming in today. Also here is Chef Jack Rabin. He's the chef behind Fog Cafe, which is inside the Naples Botanical Garden. He led the discussion last week at the garden's Tropical Fruit Fair on unusual fruits like jackfruit. And he joins us to talk about the less common tropical edibles and also what to do with all those extra standbys, the mangoes and the avocados. Jack, thanks for being here too.
Thanks for having us.
We're talking about tropical fruits. Do you have a mound of mangoes? Do you have questions about what to do with jackfruit? Is your tree looking sad and bare? We call in and ask our experts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So first, Brian Galligan, you're the director of horticulture at the Naples Botanical Garden. How much of your time is spent dealing with tropical fruit trees?
Actually, a pretty good amount. Most of our gardens have a fruit tree element to them, so you can't walk very far without being under a fruit tree, if you will. So everything from finding what to do with the fruit to how to prune it to keep it tidy and sharing some with Jack at the Fog Cafe.
So what kind of fruits are there? I mean, we all know the mango and the avocado.
Sure. Well,
and then the citrus world.
A great one now that causes a big stir in the garden is the jackfruit. And we love to take those off the tree. They can get up to 70 pounds, so a pretty monstrous fruit that grows right on the trunk. Kind of a bear to get into. You have to have a lubricated knife in order to keep the sap, if you will, the latex from sticking to the knife and then really dig in. And then Jack works his wonders with the flesh that's inside.
Wow. So tell me about this jackfruit. I don't know anything about it.
It's a really big fruit.
And other than it's huge.
Once you get into it, it's there's a lot of meat and there's different parts of the meat. There's a stem you remove and there's some larger seeds. And once you get in, it's pretty easy to clean. And this has become, as of lately, especially popular as almost a meat substitute or in cooking. It's a sturdy enough pulp or flesh that will hold up to a braising procedure you would do or a barbecue procedure. And it will almost represent like a pulled pork or a pulled chicken, like a braised chicken. So it's
– is it kind of gooey?
It's not gooey at all. It's almost like a bell pepper kind of look to it, a little bit softer. It's not as sticky as – it's not sticky on the inside. It's only the sap on the outside.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of
– so you don't eat the seeds, right?
You can eat the seeds. They are edible. They've been processed. You know, you can roast them or simmer them, and they can be turned into a hummus. They can be turned into a falafel. So – and I have a friend from Vietnam that was speaking to me on how it was such a great thing that saved Vietnam villages when they didn't have enough food to eat and what a big fruit it is and how many uses and how much of it is actually edible.
So yeah, what's it taste like? Because I've never tried it.
We
I mean,
always
if it's
likened
a meat substitute.
It seems to me to taste a lot like juicy fruit gum smells.
Juicy fruit gum smells. Oh, okay.
So
I had to
put
it in my mind. I haven't had
flavor.
Juicy fruit for a while.
Yeah.
Do they still make that?
I think so. We just substitute jackfruit.
There you go. Just chew on some jackfruit.
Yeah.
So how is the tree? Is the tree hard to grow?
It's a beautiful evergreen tree. We recommend you try to keep them small and use cultivars that stay on the small sides because you don't want to be up in a tree 20 feet up with a 70-pound fruit in your hand and try to lug it down a ladder or hand it down to your partner. But with a little pruning and the right cultivar selection, it's very easy to grow.
And you also don't want to be standing under it if a 70-pounder is about to fall off.
That is true. Usually you can smell when they're getting ripe and get them early on.
What do they smell like, the juicy fruit?
They smell like the juicy fruit. They smell amazing, yeah.
Do they flower before they fruit?
They have a kind of an insignificant flower. It looks a lot like a fig or something. They're in that family.
Oh, they're in the fig family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huh. So they're easy to grow here. You don't have to do anything to the soil. They like our sand.
They like more of an organic amended soil, but they do. They thrive in our sand. They need good moisture. If you are in a cold area, you do need to protect them in the winter. But it's a wonderful tree. Dark green foliage, very beautiful tree.
And then, Jack, you said that they stand in for meat sometimes. Do they have any protein value?
I would assume so. I mean, this.
Well, if the entire villages in Vietnam survived on it.
Well, the seeds surely do. And you can actually also harvest them early and slice them and cook them that way. And then you can incorporate all the parts.
So you have to use a lubricated knife so that it doesn't get stuck in the rind. When they fall, do they break open ever?
They're fairly durable. It takes some work to get into them. But once you're in, every one of the seeds is then surrounded in that nice pulp. But on the out between the pulp is an area called the rag, if you will. And it's kind of like little fibrous medium, and then that's what they kind of turn into, like a pulled pork consistent
pulled
vegetable.
Pork. I'm from Kansas City, so I'm thinking barbecue sauce. No,
right.
Or is
yeah,
it a,
yeah.
You can make them savory then.
Yeah, and I was gonna, you know, later on go into uses for mangoes, but before we get there, I was gonna talk about for that, you know, peach barbecue is real common, but it doesn't need to be peaches. So you have that barbecue, so you get the sweetness of your barbecue and you style it around that with your spiciness. So it has the elements. It's just from a different component.
Yeah, heating up fruit really makes it amazing because something about that heat makes those cells break and you can access that sugar better, right?
Mm-hmm. And I had never had jackfruit warm. And Jack served the tacos at our fruit festival last weekend, and they were phenomenal. You're right. A lot of flavors came out that you don't realize.
Yeah, heating up fruit is pretty incredible. So we are talking about tropical fruits. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. We're talking with Chef Jack Rabin. He's behind Fog Cafe, which is inside the Naples Botanical Garden, where the director of horticulture, Brian Galligan, does his work with the trees. So let's get into those mangoes. They're all over the place.
They are.
There are boxes in everybody's office break area of people trying to get rid of these things. Is there a mango that fails in this area? Does anybody have a sick mango tree?
Gosh, not
that's not producing.
Usually. No, not usually. Usually you have so many you're giving them out, and usually some people are so inundated they don't want them anymore. But they're wonderful uses to put them up for later storage.
It's like the zucchini of Florida, you
yes.
know, of gardens down here. So what do you do with all of your mango? I mean, there's mango salsa, the smoothie, and then what?
Right. And if you go online and you search for what you want to make, you're going to get the same how many different mango salsas you can make and how many smoothies you can make. And I think when I look at it, as I try not to look at it as a mango, I brought a sample in to give to you today. I took some mangoes that we had. Some are from the garden. Some are from my cooler. I took some serrano chilies that we had preserved on vinegar. They were left over from the high season. And I took a mame. Sapote,
yeah.
Sapote. It's a real cool fruit, and you'll see them even in grocery stores down here. But it has almost – it looks like a papaya and almost tastes as a squash and kind of a brown sugar element. So I took those, and I added the chilies and a little bit of the vinegar and some cumin seeds and some toasted coriander seeds and pureed it together. And this is a great – almost like a hot sauce you could use for a grilling sauce throughout the year. Mm. And I think more of a condiment thing, you know, if it's a mango mustard or if you took it and made a cocktail base or a sparkling water base and things you can use throughout the year because people have so much mango this time of the year that they're tired of it. And I think they get tired of the sweetness of it. So looking at it as a savory component as well.
Yeah, it makes it nice. Does it freeze well? For those who are suffering from mango fatigue,
absolutely.
Can they just stick it in the freezer?
Or just mango purees to freeze. Another great thing is you can pickle it. You know, I'm from Minnesota originally where I pickle my northern that I catch in the winter because you can only feed your family so much northern.
What's northern?
Pike.
Oh, another pike. Okay, sorry.
So we, you know, and any quick – so you look at it as a cucumber. Any quick refrigerator pickle or quick pickle recipe and you swap out mango, they're great on salads. They're great on sandwiches. We use pickled mango on our Cuban sandwich at the cafe. Because of the inconsistency and ripeness, and it kind of evens it out, and then we can use them throughout the year without worrying about it. But they're great for sandwiches and salads year-round. So,
can you dehydrate mangoes?
Yes, they're wonderful dehydrated.
Now, do you have to get a dehydrator? Do you have to invest in a dehydrator, or can you use your oven?
You can use your oven, but dehydrator – here in Florida, it's so warm. It's better to use a dehydrator and not heat your house up.
Yeah.
But they are phenomenal when you dry them. I mean, whenever we make them, they're gone in a flash, so – can never make enough dried mango.
So as the horticulturalist, you're also a bit of a chef with your tropical fruits, it sounds like.
Yeah, you kind of have to be when you get the abundance that we have in South Florida.
You got to use that stuff up. I mean, there's tons of it. So let's get into avocados. They're all over the place too. But sure. Tell me about the avocados in our area. The Haas avocado is not a Florida one.
That's correct. Yeah, most of the time we usually see the Choquette. Currently we have the Russell. That's kind of a very elongated avocado. It's one of the first ones that ripens. So you're seeing that now. And then the store avocados really just don't far up to the ones that you get off of a tree.
You mean if you get one of those that is like a Florida – I call them Florida avocados because they're just the ones that are not the Black Hoss.
Yes, but if you go for the ones that they used to market as the Slimcado, it just the flavor's not there. The production's obviously there, but
– Yeah, I bought one of those ones.
Yeah.
And I did not get another one. They just have no flavor.
And there are many cultivars out, so it's really just getting to know your growers and going to your fruit councils and meeting those guys and finding the one that meets your taste.
How many avocados are there that grow readily in this part of the world?
There's several dozen, if not 100 or so.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And then how many of them taste good?
That's the other side, right?
Therein lies the rub.
Production is one thing, right.
Yeah.
So it's hard to beat the oil of the Hass avocado.
I know. I love that oil.
Yeah.
But so then what's your favorite one from here?
I guess I would have to say the Choquette, just because it's always around and, you know, when you need it, you usually got it.
Is that elongated one you're describing?
Oh, no, that's a big round one, kind of an oblong round one. The Russell's pretty darn good too, but that's the one that's out now. And kind of we're getting into the beginning of avocados, and then they'll be around for a while thanks to many different cultivars that extend the season.
And then ripeness is always an issue with the avocado. It seems like with the Hass, it's either not ripe, not ripe, not ripe, and then it has a 12-hour window when it's perfect, and then it's just gone.
That's right.
Are the other avocados the same way?
Yeah, well, avocado won't ripen until you take it off a tree. So you do have to – you kind of remove it at will when you're going to need them. And then, yeah, a few days to a week and they will ripen up.
Okay, so that's the case with all avocados.
Yes.
Is there a way to speed up that ripening? People say put it in a bag. Does that really make a difference?
Yeah, you can add ethylene gas by putting it with some decomposing fruit, if you will, to get that – to speed up the chemicals that make that go faster. You can, but just having enough on the counter, one of those will – get ripened when you need it.
So now growing an avocado tree, is it tough?
It's a little tougher than some of the others. There is a disease out now against them, and their future is a little bit blurry, but fairly easy to grow, very readily available even at your local garden stores. But again, doing your research on the cultivars so you know what size you need, what your cold requirements are, because some people are too cool to grow some of the avocados. And some of the cultivars from Mexico and that sort have more of a cold tolerance element to them. So really just doing your research and, you know, visiting gardens, fruit councils, all those guys can really help you to find the one that will work.
Mm-hmm. And when's a good time to plant an avocado tree or any fruit tree?
Any fruit tree is now.
Now is when you need to plant?
Yes, during the rainy season. Just that way if you forget to water it or you know, we can go into some pretty major dry periods. So planting now really is very forgiving, but do cut them back. Most of them you want to cut back as you're planting them so that you can keep that small size. No one really wants to be on a ladder and picking their fruit. So really starting young with the trees and training them early is very important.
Is that kind of also a good idea with your mangoes? So you can
Yes.
reduce the amount of mangoes you have in your yard?
Yes. Mango wants to be a giant tree. And if you do want a giant shade tree, they're wonderful for that. I wouldn't put them over a seating area just because some cultivars are pretty large. But
or where you park your car.
Yes.
Oh, do the roots kind of get invasive?
Oh, no, the falling fruit.
The falling fruit. Oh, right. Yeah.
But
the
no, it wants to be a beast.
You don't want a jackfruit in the windshield either.
No, you don't. No, but there are many cultivars that are small dooryard varieties, and then others like your Valencia Pride that want to be bigger ones. But again, just doing your research and fruit councils, go to the botanical garden.
And make sure you have the right spot for it too that can accommodate.
Yes. Full sun is usually the key.
So Chef Jack, do you have a favorite kind of avocado that comes from here locally?
I don't. Not yet. I've gotten into quite a few, but not enough to call a favorite yet. I moved here 3 years ago this week actually, so this is I've been working with Brian and learning, definitely. But I love avocado, and there's so many great uses for them in everything. So,
I love avocados. So did you come down here straight from Minnesota?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Enjoy the summer. That's got to be fun for you.
Getting used to it.
Yeah. So another tropical favorite of mine is the lychee.
Oh, yeah.
How hard are those to grow?
That's more on the difficult side.
Really?
Last year was a great year for lychee, so we all got our hopes up that with the kind of the weather changing, we were on a roll to have more lychees, but this year was pretty awful.
Really?
In fact, some of our fruit enthusiasts around the area are saying don't even bother with them. I still think it's worth the try. I wouldn't give it your sole spot in your yard that you have for a fruit tree, But if you do have enough land to have a few in the back, there's some great cultivars, Hockip, Brewster. They're readily available too at all the garden centers. They are they're air layered, so they're propagated by kind of propagating a big limb. So the root systems are often not very, very intact or very strong.
Is it kind of like the friendship tree, the frangipani tree, where
you just kind of similar, off a limb? Similar, but you need to do some work to get it to root out. But in that respect, you don't really want it next to your house because in the future it could fall, topple over from a weak root system. But there are many cultivars. But again, it's kind of one of those – you have to have a cool winter followed by a pretty good warm-up to get a good set of fruit. And currently we've just had warm winters. So,
have you gotten to try any of the lychees?
Oh, yeah. They're wonderful.
Does anybody do anything with them other than eat them raw because they're incredible?
They not that you see a lot of. I've seen them on a few crudo plates, like raw fish plates. I've seen them – you know, obviously they had their little time frame, their little window where everybody had one in their martini there for a minute.
Yeah, because they look like a little eyeball.
Yep.
Yeah, it's great for Halloween time. But there's really not much else that you need to do with them because they're just pretty great on their own.
They're
and they're not in great supply.
No, and they're real cool. You know, they're real cool to accent something real subtle like a piece of raw cobia – or a piece of sashimi that you don't want to compromise the integrity of either one, and both of them are in the raw state, balance each other out so well. And I think it's one of those real delicate things that they're nature's perfect food the way they are, like an oyster.
Yeah, they're pretty delicious. I you don't want to mess with an oyster either.
Nope.
Yeah, that oyster's Rockefeller's out the door. That's so 90s. Anyway, so tell me a little bit about some other ones. What about breadfruit? Do we have any of that here?
Well, breadfruit's an ultra-tropical.
That's way further.
And we've tried many, many years. And this year is the first year that we've had an abundance of breadfruit. In fact, a couple of breadfruit. We've never really had them before. And now one of our trees is loaded. So we're going to get those to Jack and try out a number of ways to cook it. And from everything you read about it and from what I've tried, it's a wonderful fruit.
Yeah.
I would not recommend it really for anyone in Florida unless
don't invest
unless you're
your garden
expert.
Money in that, right?
Do not, no.
Yeah, only Naples Botanical Garden can probably figure that one out. And I just wanted to fully disclose that Naples Botanical Garden is an underwriter with WGCU. We just need to let people know that so that they know where you're coming from. And then I wanted to ask also about the dragon fruit. Do you have a lot of that out there?
Yeah, we do.
Can people grow that pretty readily here?
That's an easy one to grow.
In fact,
you can just give it a tree in your yard and let it climb up. And even if it doesn't set fruit, the flowers are amazing.
So it's not a tree. It's a climber.
It's a vining cactus. It's a climbing cactus.
Hmm.
But with a little bit of manipulation on like a pole or something, you can actually allow it to take up a couple square foot in your yard on a little – basically a little pedestal and let it hang off of there, and it'll develop these really giant night-blooming flowers about the size of between a softball and a volleyball or something. And then it's followed by this crazy-looking pink fruit that has either white or red flesh with black seeds. And it does have scales like a dragon, so it kind of got that nickname when it went to Southeast Asia.
Yeah, I sold my daughter on that one because it was called the dragon fruit after How to Train Your Dragon came
out. Gotcha.
I was like, oh, we have to try a dragon fruit. So tell me, Chef, what do you suggest with a dragon fruit? Just scooping it out as it is?
Yeah, you know, after the flower, and then you see how cool the fruit is, and then you cut into it, and especially if you don't know whether it's going to be red or white, it's like boy or girl, you know? You open it up and it's a big surprise, and then sometimes it's underwhelming the flavor because of the aesthetics of the fruit itself. But it's a great component to cheese platters. Again, raw in its raw state, I think it's the best. They look beautiful.
It wouldn't be bad to smear on a cracker and then put a piece of cheese on top of it.
Absolutely not.
You know, like they
wonderful.
Do with like quince paste
mm-hmm.
and stuff from the Chilean
yep.
cheeses. I think that might not be a bad idea.
And they are available too at a lot of your garden center stores.
You can buy them on
a trellis.
I don't remember them being a vine though. So is it little skinny vines? I'm thinking like a pea tendril. So are they really thick vines?
More thick, yes. Like your typical cactus, but
do they have spikes?
Spikes only on the edges. So like you know, just rows of spikes. Not easy enough where you can hold them in your hand and not get spiked, but they are armed, but very easy to grow. And there's new cultivars coming out that are much sweeter. I think when you said put it on toast, Jack and I were probably – that'd be a pretty bland little bite. But there are newer ones coming out that are very sweet.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty interesting.
They're a great component to if you're entertaining. They're a great conversation piece and then surrounded by things that taste better. But they don't taste bad. They're just a little underwhelming. But, yeah, there have been some now – As of lately, I've had that have been much better than previous ones. So.
What if on a display you stuck a little spoon in there and you sprinkle a little sugar on top?
Oh, that'd be delicious.
That makes everything better.
Or honey.
Yeah. Or fry it. No, I'm just kidding.
Why not?
And then let's talk about bananas real quick before we run out of time. When you plant bananas, do you need to be careful where you put them as far as them spreading? Because I know they're an underground rhizome.
Correct. Yes. They will take up a lot of large amount of area. And even though you give them 6 to 8 square feet, they want to lean out from that and then take 10, 20 square feet. So it does take up a good amount of land. It's one of those back in the corner in your compost pile type trees or herbs, but wonderful. In fact, right now my family's got tons of bananas that we're kind of cleaning and then freezing and storing and using in smoothies. And
the raccoons always get mine before I get a chance.
You got to get them early. When they start to show any bit of color, you got to lop that whole hand off. And
once you take that off, where do you hang it? Do you hang it somewhere in your house? Do you need to have it hanging? Can it lay on a table? Does it need to stay outside?
Ideally, it's hung because once it starts to ripen up, they get very soft and vulnerable and will break apart. I recommend hanging it where it won't drip somewhere too, because the sap from a banana does stain very readily, concrete and everything.
And so you want to keep it outside though?
Yes.
Because it likes that temperature, obviously. It's not an air conditioning kind of thing.
Right. It'll speed up the ripening too.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but I want to thank our guest, Brian Galligan, Director of Horticulture at the Naples Botanical Gardens, and also Chef Jack Rabin with Fog Cafe. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1. WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM. NPR for Southwest Florida.